All right, everyone. Today is February 25th, 2016, and this is the House Committee on Rules. Just for the good of the order, we're going to take the first bill, Senate Bill 1547A. We're going to work that. We're going to stand at ease for a little bit and then come back here to talk about the second bill, 4001. So if you're here for the second bill, feel free to get a snack or something to drink, use the facilities. All right, with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1547A.
And members of the committee, Senate Bill 1547 clarifies the term public utility, does not include public utilities district or cooperative for the purpose of regulation by the Oregon Public Utility Commission. We have the -A18 amendment that I believe the chair of the Energy and Environment Committee will be walking you through.
Come on down.
But as she comes up,
go ahead and grab an extra chair. We want all of our senators and representatives together.
I will just point out for the committee that we do have a fiscal and a revenue statement on the A18 amendment, and they are posted on OLIS.
Welcome. Good evening.
Hello. Good evening, Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Gilliam, Vice Chair Hoyle, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I am the state representative from House District 47. It is my pleasure today to bring you the -A18 amendments on Senate Bill 1547. Those are available in OLIS. So this should be familiar to most of you because this is very similar to the concepts that we voted on in this body on in House Bill 4036 just last week. What we did is that bill went over to the Senate and had a -41 amendment, which Senator Baya will be able to tell you more about, and put some different changes to that bill. We got together with the concepts that were in the -41 amendments and the base House Bill 4036 and came up with the -A18s that are before you. And what I would like to do is just tell you that this is something that's taken a lot of work. You can see by the people who are here that we've come together and put together a bill that takes the best, I think, pieces of both of those bills into a new bill. And I will let my colleagues speak, and when they're done, I'm going to walk you through each section of the amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 6, which is the south end of the valley. This is, I guess we'll bring this back to you because you did so good on it the first time, this 4036. Actually, when 4036 got to the House, I worked on it. Part of my issue there was I think the RPS portion of it makes a lot of sense, and that's in place. The changes in coal are a good change, and that doesn't change. From my background of spending 10 years with the Public Utility Commission, I was concerned to make sure that the issues of having the PUC having their authority to control things and protect ratepayers was in place. So we strengthened that language in the bill, made it very clear that they were there. Other pieces that we dealt with was there was interest in adding some small-scale community projects. That's in the bill. We also address some issues that people had about biomass. That's in the bill. Both of those things were very good efforts at helping rural communities, particularly, and keeping jobs and issues in state. So I think we've done a good job of that. Overall, I think it's a solid bill. One of the things that I think you probably heard before is a fear that the changing from coal to renewables would have a huge rate impact. I would remind folks that actually some of you were around in 2007, but when the first RPS was put in place, that's the same concern that we had heard expressed then, that it was going to blow rates through the roof. That has not happened, and we do have a cost cap in place, and we've never hit it. I suspect the same is true then. What we've seen happen over time is the technology has improved, and it works real well at the time. I would comment, you hear a lot about comparisons with hydro. If you think about it, anytime you put a generator online, you have a capital cost that's amortized usually over 20 years, sometimes a little longer. Same is true with solar, a little less time, and wind, But once you get those amortized, there's no fuel costs, and so they actually look just like a dam, which we're real experienced with in Northwest. So I think that some of those fears are just, they're understandable, but they're probably misplaced. Over time, it'll look good. The other thing I would tell you is you probably heard this from the commission and from the advocates, is that the coal plants that are in place in other states, with the exception of the ones in Montana, they will be fully amortized out by 2030. One of them, I think, and I don't remember whether it's in Wyoming or Utah, maybe that's in 2032. The bill that's structured now allows the PUC to make sure that we're not spending more money there, and to the extent that there's some economic benefit that may continue if those things are somewhere else, they have the authority to grab that economic benefit that belongs to Oregon ratepayers and use it to offset any rate increases in Oregon. So I think it's a fair bill in that regard. I think that I have great faith in the commission's ability to control those costs. I think over time, with various commissions, they've done a good job. And I think those concerns are something that will be taken care of. So I would urge you to support the bill as it came forward. There are various technical amendments. We spent the day trying to get the language just right on the biomass piece and working with lots of different folks on that. I'm not sure we have it just right, but we do have a clear legislative intent, mm-hmm. which is that the intent is on the small community side, that the biomass, and make sure I get this right, Senator Edwards, is intended to be limited to 20 megawatts of sailed power. Sale power. And we have an agreement from the utilities and the community that is the understanding, and that may be one, if it isn't quite right, we may come back in 17 and fix. But there's agreement from all sides that's what the intent is. So with that, I will stop.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, committee, for the record, Mark Johnson from House District 52. I just want to go back and cover some of the reasons that have us here at this point. And as you'll recall, there have been attempts, and there's serious interest in having a ballot measure that would put this issue in front of Oregon's voters on the ballot in November. And because of that prospect and the uncertainty and unsettledness that could create within our electrical system in Oregon, there was a concerted effort to come together and try to address those concerns and to try to put together a package that makes sense. But you need to understand that this is not simply a knee-jerk reaction. This is a very well thought out, very well orchestrated and organized piece of legislation you have in front of you. In this short February session, there's been some really good work done, and I'd really want to take my hat off to Senator Beyer here, who's been really integral to addressing some of the concerns initially. And it's really important to get on the record that earlier on there's been some misconceptions about the lack of oversight in this process, the lack of accountability. But I can tell you that, you know, this week the PUC has been in the room, having their fingerprints and their needs and their wishes met, and that's just really important to get on the record. But I just want to say, for my own district in House District 52, this is something that my people have been asking for. The public utilities are very thankful for this bill versus the ballot measure, because in a ballot measure scenario, they would have been impacted negatively. They aren't impacted here at all. They can continue to do business as usual, and they're very thankful for that. My small-scale renewable energy people are very thankful for the components that are in this bill, because it gives them the chance to continue to incentivize, to have investment. There's going to be a lot of investment in renewable energy throughout the state of Oregon. Some of the work that's in here regarding the renewable issuance of renewable energy credits is going to ensure that Oregon products are going to be invested in. This is going to be the place that our utilities are going to want to invest, because of the RECs and how they're treated here differently than they will be in other states. So for those that are looking for investment in rural Oregon, rural energy projects, this is a good bill for them. So, again, I just want to thank my colleagues for allowing me to be a part of this process, and I would hope that you would adopt these amendments this evening.
Chris Edwards, State Senator from Eugene. I'm here to express support for the bill and the dash A18s. And I also wanted to put on the record, first of all, I wanted to thank Senator Beyer for working with me a lot on this bill, and I was able to have a significant amount of input. I appreciate that. I second everything that has been said by each of the presenters prior to me, And I'm really, other than to express support overall for the A18s, I do want it on the record a change that we will likely need, a tweak that needs to be made in the next legislative session. And that is in the small scale community-based renewable energy projects section. That'd be section 14 of the bill. It says currently the biomass piece is not limited for sales of up to 20 megawatts, and that should actually, that needs to be limited. So we're, you know, out of time for more amendments to this bill. We need to move it forward, but we do have we had everybody in the room today. We had the biomass folks, OFIC. We had the investor-owned utilities in the room, and the community renewables folks, and all four of us legislators were there. And we all agreed that we will come back and we will fix this to cap it at up to 20 megawatts of sales of biomass would qualify in this section, would qualify as community renewables. But it does need to be capped, and the community renewables folks need to see that. And we are committing on the record to do that at the first chance that we get, which will probably be 2017.
Madam Chair, can I interject? Thank you all. One thing I didn't hear, and Senator Beyer, you might be able to address this. One of the reasons that I've been supportive is my perception has been that there will be certainty provided to the IOUs, for one, which then extends to ratepayers. And would you mind talking a little bit about what your, you know, with your background, I value your perception on that point.
Well, I think the certainty is the bill spelling out what's expected versus going to a ballot measure, which, as we all know, you don't write ballot measures to make good law. You write ballot measures to pass. And I think some of the language that has been forwarded on that would have been, one, it's a little unclear and most likely would be more problematic, particularly for some of the small utilities, mm-hmm. in terms of where would they be in terms for that. So I think that's a concern. My concern, and I think what you're getting at, is there was we all read in the newspapers the stories, you know, the he said, she said kind of stuff about the PUC. It was important to me that we were very clear in that language to make sure that what's called the regulatory compact, mm-hmm. was in place, and the PUC had the authority to make sure that expenditures were reasonable and prudent. And one of the pieces of that, you'll see some language in there that says that to the extent that they're acquiring new resources, that has to be done according to a plan that's approved by the PUC and through a competitive bid process. Mm-hmm. Now, that's basically the way the commission operates, but we wanted to emphasize and make sure that that was understandable as we're moving into some new areas with a heavier RPS, that we had that clearly on the place that we're doing new things, but ratepayers are going to get the best cost-effective purchase available.
Okay. So at its heart, what this bill does is ensure that by 2030, coal is removed from the electricity mix for the IOUs for Oregon customers, and that by 2040, 50% of our electricity will be coming from renewable energy sources. But in addition to those basic things, there are a lot of different sections of the bill, and so I just want to take a few minutes to go over those so that you understand what's in there, and especially focusing on what's different than what we passed in the House and what was in the Dash 41 amendments that are showing up here. And I would like to also say it's been a pleasure working with Senator Beyer on this and all of the colleagues, but especially in working to make sure that some of the concerns that were addressed and things were taken into consideration. I think I'm really happy with where we've ended up with this bill. So just going through Section 1 and 2, this is where we eliminate coal from the electricity generated by 2030. There is a small exception for up to 5 years max for PGE for its share of the coal strip plant. So there's a potential extension of that. It's allowable, but it's not required. This was in the original bill. And also it has the what Senator Beyer was mentioning before, allows the PUC to consider the net gain or net loss upon the sale of any coal-fired resource for the economic benefit for retail electric customers. In Section 3, I think the different things that the one thing that's different in that section compared to the bill that we passed out of the House before is that it ensures that the natural growth of city boundaries through acquisition doesn't trigger any additional renewable portfolio standard requirements, and that was something that was important to the cities. In section four, the differences that you see here are the biomass pieces that we've talked about already. It removes some prohibition on some of the how the RECs are treated for biomass energy generation. It also adds waste facility energy generations to the qualifying electricity for renewable resources. In sections five and six, this not major changes here. This is where we talk about the increased requirements for renewable portfolio standards for renewable energy. I think the biggest difference here is that from the last bill that we passed to this one is that it does provide for the evaluation of a competitive bidding process. And so that was just what Senator Beyer was talking about for competition from diverse ownership of renewable energy sources. So again, giving the PUC more direction or more authority around that too. Section seven, we talk about the how renewable energy certificates are treated. This is actually what was not included in the dash 41s, but is something that we passed in the House, are how they're treated. And this is good because it keeps the provision where it's allowing an incentive for early new renewable energy sources to be built once this bill passes, and it gives the RECs created by those that energy generation an unlimited life to spur the development of those things, which I think will be helpful in all parts of the state for that piece. Section 8 goes into some details on the acquisitions of service territory, how service territory is treated, especially for COUs, and we made sure that some of the provisions that were in the underlying bill that were taken out in the Dash 41 amendments were put back in there. For sections 9 and 10 have to do with the electricity service suppliers, which basically says that for electricity service suppliers, they need to meet their RPS obligation by at least 80% bundled renewable energy credits, which is a change from past policy. Section 11, recovery of compliance costs. This includes energy storage as eligible for automatic adjustment clause, which is a new thing from previous. And it also modifies the process for companies to request automatic adjustments. So companies can request an effective date, but the PUC must approve that, and that's actually a difference there. We have we have the reliability standards, the piece there. Again, the biggest difference is that it gives the PUC authority to investigate reliability beyond issues that are just brought to them by the IOU, so it gives them more authority to do that. Section 14, we've talked about a lot already, the small-scale renewable energy projects. Again, it is the mandate of the 8% electrical capacity comes from small-scale community renewable process. So this is a big change from the previous, the 2007 RPS bill that passed. Well, that was a goal, and now we have a mandate there. It also expands that to so that biomass can be qualified as that small-scale community renewables. And again, that's where we expect to have the cap of the 20 megawatts of sale included in the next legislative session. Section 15 allows thermal BTUs to qualify for REC generation, which again ties in with the biomass piece. And for Section 17 and 18, when an electricity utility acquires service territory, the PUC may acquire that utility to pay the cost of acquisition to the electric company. So that is something that has to do with when electric company service territory is bought without consent. For sections 18A and B, this has to do with the treatment of the state and federal production tax credits. This was a piece that, again, we had the PUC's input on that to make sure that they must include an IOU's forecast of projected production tax credits in rates through a process that they will set up. So this was a piece that we had a lot of discussion about. Section 18 is actually the underlying bill of Senate Bill 1547. So what we have here with this amendment is not a gut and stuff, but it is a stuff. And so the underlying bill itself is in Section 18C. 19 goes into the definition of energy efficiency and directing electric companies to pursue all cost-effective energy efficiency resources, as well as allowing the PUC to direct electric companies to acquire cost-effective demand response resources. In Section 20 and 21, this is transportation electrification, so electric vehicles, and dealing with building up infrastructure for that. I think the biggest change that you'll see from the bill that was passed previously was that when utilities are constructing and operating electric vehicle charging stations, they must consider market competition. So that is something that we've added in the bill. Community solar projects, we've talked about this, so this is something that Senator Beyer has worked on a lot, and we've incorporated a lot of what was in the Dash 41 amendments, but also made sure that we still have the requirement that 10% of community solar programs capacity be made available to low-income customers. So we have that included in here. The rest of it is mainly just repealing some outdated sections and has some additional reports that are required by the PUC. But that, all in all, is the entire bill. And the only last thing that I was mentioning is that the bill does keep in the 4% rate cap that was in the original RPS that was passed in 2007. So with that, that's the overall of the bill for your pleasure, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you all. Any questions?
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe this is ambiguous. I don't know. But in the last 8.5 years since I've been in the building, it seems like every session we've had biomass bills come about. Senator Edwards has talked a lot about it. Commissioner DeBone out of Deschutes County, you know, is in the building all the time talking about it. Does the efforts of this bill and biomass affect any of that conversation that we've had over the years about trying to perpetuate?
So for those of us that have been looking for a path forward for biomass viability as a power source, this is the most substantial piece of legislation that we've had. I worked in 2009 on the legislation that would allow the use of pre-95 biomass RECs, but then the compromise was that the RECs wouldn't be able to be used until 2026, which is deemed them, you know, not very valuable today. And so what we have with the decline of natural gas prices, natural gas is just a more attractive option, frankly, for even, you know, for sawmills. You know, there's one major biomass plant that is attached to a sawmill in southern Oregon, and they are considering shutting down because natural gas costs less. And when I was talking to the owner of that plant, he's a community, you know, very community-minded individual, and he said, "You know, Chris, I hate to do it, but you know, I mean, natural gas has just gotten so inexpensive, and the biomass just isn't penciling anymore. And so, you know, I can let it, you know, rot in the woods, or I can have a collection." A program that employs people, employs truck drivers, employs people at the plant, and actually produce some renewable energy out of it. So, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to find, the sweet spot that makes that work. And this bill, more than any since I've been in the legislature since 2007, gets us closer to that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may, during the time I was at the PUC and others, I was always trying to make biomass work well. And until the other day when I was talking with Senator Edwards, who, you know, spent a lot of his young career working in the timber industry, I really understood the generation side of it really well and the costs. But what I didn't have an appreciation for was the symbiotic relationship those facilities have with the rest of the timber industry in terms of they got to get rid of that, what we consider a waste product, someplace. And if they're not doing it to generate electricity, they're putting it in a landfill, which from a climate perspective, has its own issues because it'll end up, as it rots, creating methane, and we'll have the same issues there, and we're actually dealing with a lot of those in different places already. I have one in my community, an old mill that my park district acquired and dealing with. So it has a, besides having an economic benefit, making it work, it also has a really good, strong tie to keeping our other industry, our timber industry, healthy as well.
Thank you. One final question, Madam Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. And since I was in Ways and Means while you guys were I bet there was beer involved. I know there wasn't. And there wasn't in my meeting,
not.
But anyway. We had talked earlier, is it necessary? And if it's not at this point, just say it's not an issue, Rep. Huffman. It's no big deal. The nameplate, aggregate, total generation, does that need to be brought up on the record, or are we good on that, or do you follow me? I might be using the wrong terms.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, I think the way that Legislative Council has laid it out here, based on my conversations with both Mark, the drafter, as well as with the PUC, who will be the interpreter of this, it's pretty clear that is a, frankly, a bigger number. It's a bigger pie that you're doing a percentage of than the way it was written before.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Huffman, one of the things I would say is that that is something that we were very concerned about, of making sure we were getting that language right. And I think there's a commitment from myself, from Representative Johnson and Representative Reardon, to keep working on the issue if it's not. But we feel like we've gotten a good place. We've talked with the proponents and the community renewables community to get to a good place with it.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for your work on a complicated, controversial subject. While I have the key members of the committee here, committees, I appreciate how hard it is to bring the stakeholders, classic word, stakeholders together. I was encouraged in this second round about what you already talked about, bringing the PUC in. I voted for the bill. I'm encouraged by the 18s. But I have a quick question. In the course of all these discussions and negotiations, how much did we call on or invite actual ratepayers to the table? I know we all care about them, but I'm curious as to their voice in your negotiations.
So, Chair Williamson, Representative Gilliam, so we had the Citizens Utility Board were part of the discussions, as well as the PUC itself, and I personally am a ratepayer, so was also involved in the discussions. But we've heard. I can tell you that I've heard from so many community members who are really excited about what this bill does, and that it gets coal out of our electricity sector and allows us to increase our renewable requirements by 50%, which is doubling what our existing one was. And in addition, I think that there's been polls that have been done that showed 7 out of 10 Oregonians absolutely support the work that we're doing to make that happen.
Representative Hoyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want to thank all of you for the work that you've done, and I'm lucky that I get to serve with Representative Vega Peterson, and also those of us in Lane County have Senator Beyer as a resource who's been on the PUC. So, we're lucky, and you've done a lot of great work in a short period of time. One thing that I would be remiss in mentioning, I think I've spoken to all of you about it, is that I wish we could have done something more to add an incentive for the domestic production of solar panels. We make solar panels here in Oregon. Those are good paying jobs. And I know that we couldn't do it now, but what I would say to my colleagues who will be back in 2017 is that it is critical that we do something to make sure that the solar panels that we buy are made by Oregon workers who are being paid good wages in California. They have found a way to do this, and over 70% of the solar panels that they purchase on their incentive programs are made in California. There is no reason why we can't put Oregonians to work. And so I want to thank you for the work you're doing. And what I would say is when you come back in 2017, I hope that you can work towards that end. So thank you.
Vanessa Smith-Warner. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would just echo the other committee's thanks. This has been a long, torturous process, and you'd never know by looking at the four of you, because you all brush the daisy. So I just wanted to take a moment. I know that Representative Huffman asked about the numbers, but going back to Section 4 about the small-scale renewables, my understanding is that it is the intent that those small-scale projects are not utility-owned, and we would like them to be made in Oregon, but I understand there are Interstate Commerce Clause issues with that, but I just wanted to speak to the that we agree that those indeed are the goals and the intent of that language.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith Warner, I think that's in all the discussions I've had with people. I think that's the understanding that they would be. Obviously, the intent is that they would be in Oregon. That's the desire, and I think most everybody agrees with that. We do have a constitutional issue in that we can't mandate that they be in Oregon because of the Commerce Clause. But I think it's not, these are relatively small projects. It's not likely that you would have them very far out of state or out of state.
Well, I'll just add, Representative, that again, it's the way that we have changed the way that the renewable energy credits on these renewable projects are awarded and the freedoms that the utilities will have for investing in projects here in Oregon. I think the rules will be different for RECs issued for renewable projects built out in Oregon versus Washington versus Idaho. This will be a more attractive place for our utilities to invest. So I think that we put some measures in this bill. It ensures that Oregon will be a desirable place to invest in renewable energy.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for the panel before I take a motion? All right, thank you all. Thank you for your work. Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, just a point of order. As you know, I do have an amendment I'd like to present, and I'd just like to clarify at what point that I'll be able to do that.
You can do that right now if you would like.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I'll take advantage of that. I appreciate that very much. I am presenting before the committee the -A19 amendments. As this bill was referred to earlier as a stuff, this just makes a stuff just a little bit better. Everybody likes a stuffing to be a little bit better, you know. And so that's what I'm attempting to do with these amendments today. Very briefly, I'll talk to you about the amendments and what they do. First of all, we'll deal with the issue of carbon reduction and at what price. This is a subject that has been continually talked about here forever, but we never really have an idea of what carbon reduction actually costs. And in this simple amendment here, I just simply point out that an electric company, an IOU that's subject to provisions of the large utility RPS, shall conduct an annual study on the cost per ton of carbon reduced due to complying with our large utility RPS. So simply it allows, actually doesn't allow, it requires a report being made annually to study what the costs of carbon reduction really are as it comes to compliance with what we see in the A18 amendments. And then, of course, the public is notified as to what the costs of compliance truly are. So I think that's just a sweetener, basically, on the bill to make it better. Another issue is a small provision you see in line 1 and 2 of the A19 amendments. And what that basically does is make life better for a municipality. Say a municipality begins its own energy co-op or a PUD, it gives them 3 years instead of a matter of days to meet the RPS. Right now, as the A18 is written, it makes compliance really basically impossible. You cannot do it that quickly. So it just, I think, is a friendly amendment, especially toward municipalities that will choose to begin their own co-ops or PUDs. Just makes compliance reasonable. And that's the sum total.
Excellent. So there was, is there a motion in there?
Yes, I would make a motion, thank you, that we adopt the A-19 amendments to Senate Bill 1547, A-18.
Thank you, Representative Wilson has moved the A-19 amendments to Senate Bill 1547A. Is there any discussion? Aaron, can you call the roll? Or Zoe, sorry.
Excuse me just a moment. I would like to know a little more about it, if I could. I haven't had a chance to review this amendment. Could we take just a moment?
Yeah, can we stand at ease for a moment? Ready for the roll call? Yes. Thank you, Zoe. We're ready.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
No.
Representative Smith-Warner?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Williamson?
No. Motion fails.
Madam Chair, I move the A18 amendment to Senate Bill 1547A.
Vice Chair Gilliam moves the A18 amendments to Senate Bill 1547A. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Can we have a roll call, Zoe? Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Yes.
Representative Kennemer. Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Williamson?
Aye. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1547 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved Senate Bill 1547A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Zoe, can you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Yes.
Representative Kennemer.
No.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Hoyle.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm signaling my intent to file a minority report.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Aaron, can you review? Representative Kennemer seconds that. Can you review the process for a minority report?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As you have served notice before the end of the day today, a written notice would be appropriate as well. You have until business tomorrow to provide the minority amendment. Just for clarity, it has to be an issue that was presented.
Great, thank you. With that, the motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Vega Peterson. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1547A. We are going to stand at ease and for 15 minutes. Thank you all for being patient. We are not going to work Senate Bill 4001 tonight, so we are going to adjourn for the evening. Thank you. Have a good night. Have a good night. For the evening. Thank you.